What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back at it again on this Monday afternoon. Waited a little while because I knew there was going to be some news about training camps and some of the procedures. And I don't think it's set in stone, but it's probably concrete enough for me to put together a little podcast. And that's what we will be embarking on in July 20th, coming down the home stretch here where teams are reporting. And we can get back to, I guess, some semblance of normalcy. I see baseball on in the background. NBA players, no positive tests. So sports feel like they're kind of coming back. You know, golf's in full swing. Let's just keep charging through, baby. Got a lot to talk about. Some thoughts on these new training camps, and really more centered around the preseason games. And as I'm recording this is very fluid, but it looks like there will be no preseason games. Have some thoughts on that. Because there's going to be no preseason games, I picked my top five most stable franchises to be able to handle this. And then, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff, is my Instagram handle. Slide in those DMs. I welcome any and all questions. For those of you that have, I tip my hat to you. And for those of you that haven't yet, please do this. Go to Apple. Leave a review. If you like the podcast, 5 stars. Listen, please give 5 stars. If you don't like it, give 2. I don't really care, but leave a review. Preferably 5 stars. And subscribe to the podcast as well on Apple. I know a lot of you listen on Colin's feed, but I'd greatly appreciate if you subscribe to that podcast as well. A lot of people ask, it's probably easier that way. So let's dive in to what I just learned. Schefter tweeted out, Rap Sheet tweeted out. And again, this is a fluid situation, but if the NFL agreed to this, it sure feels like the NFLPA will agree to this as well, that there will not be any preseason games this fall. And it got me thinking. I would imagine many people listening at one point in time in their life, whether it was college or right out of college, did an internship. And I can only speak from my experience, an internship my senior year in college. I've talked a lot about being a GA at Fresno State and obviously working for the Eagles. My senior year at Cal Poly, it's in the Central Coast. I got an internship with the Kansas City Chiefs in like their sales and marketing, and it changed my career. It didn't pay. I got no money during the football season. My dad knew a guy in Kansas City. He rented us a room for like $400 a month or something, and I just helped out with like selling signage. But through that, I kind of got my feet wet by meeting some guys on Herm Edwards' staff. This was in the fall of 07. Team was terrible. I think Larry Johnson had held out. They had just drafted Dwayne Bowe. And Carl Peterson and Herm Edwards were, the coach and general manager. And I just kind of got me really, really inspired to work in football. And I was able to help out the coaching staff. I kind of went to the director football operations and told him I would do any and everything to help him out. And after my kind of 9 to 5 for, 3 or 4 weeks, I got to just do miscellaneous stupid stuff, but inspired me and helped me kind of change the path of my life and got me involved in college football after that. And then in the NFL, it's kind of where it all started. And without that internship, who knows the way my life would have played out. I'm a believer. I'm not that religious of a human being, but I do believe that everything happens for a reason, and that internship changed my life. Sometimes you need to get a foot in the door. Now, these guys that were just drafted, and I'm not talking about first or second round picks. They're, and really third rounders, they're what we call on scholarship. They are not going to be cut, no matter how terrible they are. And every year, we see several first rounders have awful first years. And sometimes, and I know a lot of you listening don't get the opportunity to go to training camp. And it depends. If even doing what I do now, I only go to 1 or 2 practices a week. This year I won't be able to go to any because of the virus. But typically if I go to, 5 or 6 Niners practice, and back in the day when I went to Raiders practice, you can get a feel for what young guys are good and what young guys are not. When you're working in the front office, you're watching every single rep they're taking. By about 2 weeks in and a couple preseason games, you got a pretty good idea of if this guy can contribute or if he's got to be a developmental player. But the biggest time for training camp, because a lot of times in the OTAs, you get excited about fifth, sixth, seventh, even undrafted free agents. But by the time, like my first year in the league, I thought some guys were going to be really good and they didn't even make it through the first week of training camp. You realize that let's wait till a preseason game or at least the pads come on. And then when the lights come on in a preseason game, when you're playing another opponent and you don't know what's coming, you learn a lot about the guy. And that's an incredible opportunity for late round picks and undrafted free agents to prove their worth to a general manager and most specifically to the head coach, because the head coach is the guy giving you playing time. And if there aren't going to be preseason games, and it sure as hell looks like there's not going to be preseason games, I don't see how the 6th, 7th, and undrafted free agents make the team. Because if I'm running training camp and I don't get any preseason reps, and I understand a lot of coaches these last several years have not even put in their starters, but this year, because there have been no offseason activities, you're going to want to see where these guys are at. You might play a little bit, in theory, if you had some preseason games. Now you have to use all that energy to the reps in practice. I don't see how an undrafted free agent now gets any consequential reps. I just don't see how it happens in practice. Because if anything, you're given like a fifth rounder an extra rep. Or you're given a guy that was on your team last year in a practice squad an extra rep. Or maybe your starter, you know, if it's DeAndre Hopkins and he's new to your team, he's going to want every rep known to man. Or if you have a Nick Bosa and he's trying to take the next step, or Khalil Mack who's trying to get his mojo back, whoever, your starting players are going to want every rep. You know, Peyton Manning was notorious for this. Remember the famous Brock Osweiler gif? He wouldn't let him in a blowout game, let alone practice reps. Tom Brady's the same way. A lot of players, because they didn't have any offseason, their offseason training has kind of probably been hit or miss. It's probably got a little more normal these last couple months where some of these gyms in these different states have been open and these guys have been practicing with their own teammates. But it's different with coaches and your strength staff. So I just don't see how they ever get – where do they get their opportunity? Now, I understand their name and their college film. If you're a fourth or fifth – fourth rounders aren't a lock on most years. But I would say they're going to get the benefit of the doubt because as a fourth rounder, you got a little more bonus money. But a guy that I draft in the seventh round, every year we look up by week three or week four, and you know this as a fan, if you're a fan of the Bengals or the Texans or the Jaguars or the Giants or the Seattle, whoever, you go, God, we got our fifth rounder not only make the team, but he's a starter. And we have an undrafted free agent that rotates on defense. I just don't see how that happens, because if you're a coach, you're going to have to feel good about the guy understanding what to do. And all these guys that were on your practice squad last year that have been re-signed to the team and that are going to show up at training camp are going to be so much farther ahead of that guy. And here's something that most people probably don't know. It's kind of, you know, niche-y football, geeky stuff. That as a vested veteran, which I think is 4 years and more in the NFL, once you make the roster and play week one and you're on the roster after week one, let's say, hypothetically, you're making $3 million. That salary, if you make the team, let's say you're like a seventh-year guy and you're making $4 million a year. Well, if you play week one, your salary is guaranteed for the rest of the year. It's why a lot of older players during training camp do not make the team, because an undrafted free agent or a late-round pick, it might not even beat them out, but it's just equally as good. So instead of paying the guy $4 million, it allows you to pay another guy $750,000. Hell, whatever the league minimum is, might be like $675,000. And that allows you do that a couple times. I think the average is several, you know, some teams have four or five undrafted players make the team. I think the average is like almost two. But every year those guys make the team. And if those guys are going to make the team, that means a veteran player, and I don't just mean like a 12-year guy, it might be a fifth-year guy, gets cut. And training camp in football is unlike the other two sports. And in the NBA, when you bring your 15 guys to camp, maybe you have two spots. If you're a shitty team, you have two or three spots. I mean, the Warriors haven't had a spot for like the last 5 years. Most good NBA teams at most have one. In baseball, maybe a couple spots, and a lot of them are determined by service time. In football, there are legitimately, even in really good teams, I mean, star-studded, like the Chiefs, probably four or five spots open. And then bad teams, like teams with new coaches, The New York Giants and Joe Judge, it might be 20 spots up for grabs. So those preseason games, are like a test. You know, you're either going to get a pass or a fail. And there's the difference between playing like an A or playing like a C might cost you a position on the team, might cost you a roster spot. And the other thing is, when I keep an undrafted free agent on the team over that vested veteran that's making millions of dollars, I can cut that undrafted free agent in the middle of the season if he's not any good. And I don't take a financial hit because his contract's not guaranteed. He's not making any money. So it's going to be very, very fascinating. I think we're going to look back on this season in several years and see countless. And I won't really blame the teams if you cut, you know, an undrafted free agent because he didn't get reps in practice, and that guy becomes like an 8-year starter or even like a 6th or 7th rounder on some of these good teams. Like, it's going to be hard for a 7th round player to make the Kansas City Chiefs, to make the Baltimore Ravens, you know, to make the Seattle Seahawks. And in this scenario, now it would be very, very difficult in any scenario, but if I'm a 6th or 7th rounder for the Baltimore Ravens and I go one of the best rosters in the league, at least I'm going to get reps in practice in a normal season. And then in preseason games, if Lamar and all my starters aren't playing in the 2nd and definitely the 4th game, I might get to play 70, 80 snaps. And who knows? I make a couple plays. All of a sudden, John Harbaugh's like, I like this freaking guy. I've liked him since OTAs. I've liked him since early in camp. I'm pounding the table. We're going to keep him. And we're going to keep him over this fringe older player that, you know, will free up some cap space. I don't see that happening now. I talked to someone in the NFL last week. I was driving to play golf. He kind of called me to BS. And he was like, you watch, this year, coaches are going to be very, very conservative with who they keep, because you're going to want to make sure guys know exactly what they're doing. So older players, and when I say older players, I'm just talking about guys that have been on your practice squad the last 2 years, are going to have such a leg up, because for the last, at minimum the last year, your coach saw that guy every day, you saw him at practice, the defensive coordinator who uses him for scout team against the starters can swear by him to the head coach, be his effort, the way he's focused, how well he reps stuff in practice, and it's going to have a ripple effect. And you know what? I get it, because this really benefits older players in the NFL. Because, like I said, no sport has more people and more new labor, more cheap labor, gunning for your job at a high-priced job in any industry like the NFL. Because every year, there are how many draft picks? There's 7 rounds worth of picks, 10 to 15 undrafted free agents, you know, a team. And every one of those guys are coming for people's jobs. And I just think it diminishes their opportunity greatly. And I get it. From the owners, what I don't think people understand is how little the owners give a shit about, like, when they practice or installation times. They don't care about any. This is all about money. That's all this is about. Like, you think the coaches would want no preseason games? Come on. You're out of your mind. Of course they would. Not just for the starters, but for everyone. Just to rep it in this weird time during this virus. But money always, you know, kind of rules the day. And you know, in big business, it should, for the most part. And in this situation, in these weird times, I understand getting rid of the preseason games. But like the internship that changed my life, because I just got an opportunity, a lot of these guys won't be given the opportunities. Now, luckily, if you're an undrafted free agent, it's not like football's going away. If you just show up in practice, you can still make, you know, put your best foot forward and attempt to influence individual coaches and show out. Every rep is going to be infinitely more important than it typically is, because there is going to be a very, very limited amount of opportunities just in practice. And now that we know that these preseason games are all but done. Okay, let's dive into the 5 teams in the league that have the best opportunity, in my opinion, to handle this weird, crazy, and safe to say unprecedented preseason. You know, I think it's clear, you know, like I just talked about, no preseason games. It doesn't make sense, because there was talk maybe they'd have one preseason game. It didn't make sense to have one preseason game for the league. You know, and obviously the players, the veteran players, the older guys that are, you know, let's face it, their jobs, a lot of them are on the line every single training camp. It's good for them, no preseason games. But if you're the league, it only makes sense to have two preseason games or zero. Because at least two, you give every team a rep on the protocols during the virus. There would be a lot of pushback because if you only did one, half the teams in the league don't get a home game, don't get to practice the protocols. So I understand for the NFL, make it easier, no fighting, just say, listen, no preseason games. It's just the cards were dealt, we'll just deal with it this year, and good luck coaches, good luck GMs, you figure it out. But I picked the five, and these just happen to be five of the most stable franchises, but the five teams, in my opinion, that are most equipped to handle a training camp heading into an NFL season where you're not going to get any games. And you know, you're reading about some of these protocols that are coming out for virus testing. Camp's going to be very weird. I even if you read the protocols that everyone tweeted out, I think it's going to be a lot of unknown. Who knows who's going to miss time? Who's going to get sick? Who's going to get injured? Remember back in 2011, the amount of injuries in that camp when it was the lockout and there wasn't an offseason was the highest of the last decade. There's going to be a lot of unknown. I've listened to some podcasts about the NBA bubble, and things are, you know, every day something that goes wrong, and not a big deal. Like one day in one of the practice facilities, the lights were too dim, the guys could barely see. Next day, the NBA changes. Like there's just some unknown in these situations. You just don't quite know this river of the virus that you're going into. You know, every day it feels like things changed. But there are certain teams, for my money, that are just more equipped. So let's start with number five. And I'm going to go, now listen, on paper you'd say this is probably their worst team in the last two decades. But I put them on this list simply for this. Because I easily could have put like the Niners, for example. But the Niners are depending on two first-round picks to impact their team. These guys haven't got an offseason. They're replacing a Pro Bowler in DeForest Buckner and Emmanuel Sanders, a wide receiver. So there's still some unknown there. It's going to be difficult. I'm going with Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots because every single player that is on that roster, he handpicks. Just the way the Patriots roll. He's the dictator. You know, you hear that term a lot on social media. This is an actual dictator, Bill Belichick. He's the boss. So every single player that makes their team every single year, it's because of Bill Belichick, and he's the general manager, he's the coach, and even though they have a new quarterback situation, even with Cam, I think he is the most equipped coach in league history to handle these type of situations, and I think that it actually works to his benefit because he can dumb things down, he can expand it, and he can do whatever he wants, and he knows exactly how to resonate with players, and even if he's doing it on like dumb it down levels, the moment you can't hang, he'll just get rid of you. And I think the players that he knows he can depend on, he'll lean on. They still have a core group of guys there. I'm just simply putting them on this list because they have the greatest coach of all time who happens to be their general manager and who happens to run everything football in that organization and has been to 9 Super Bowls in 20 years. Like, I just believe in the guy. And I still think if they can figure out Cam and maybe a lighter workload in camp will help Cam kind of ease him into the season, they easily could make the playoffs. Number four, the Baltimore Ravens. They do something that no other team does. And one thing I kept pushing back on, for them to take the next step, they would have to expand the passing game. But I actually think with this just kind of weird offseason. I mean, there's been no offseason in terms of practices, so their own division haven't really been able to rep it. Now, I would imagine all the coaches, you know, on the Bengals, on the Steelers, on the Browns, and teams on, you know, that are on their schedule have isolated them and tried to spend some time over the last 5 or 6 months developing some game plans. But it's one thing for the coaches to know what to do. It's another thing for the players to know what to do. And one thing every team would do for a team like the Baltimore Ravens, they would set aside some practices in OTAs and definitely in training camp to rep it out. And that probably won't be feasible this year. So they have a huge advantage just because they have a unique offense. They have a ton of guys coming back on defense. Their core group of players are all in their mid to early 20s. Their coaching staff did not change at all. They have Harbaugh. They have Wink Martindale. They have Greg Roman. They would have been good whether we had a normal year or whether we had a coronavirus year. But in this type of year with, you know, DaCosta and Harbaugh, they've worked together for years. They're on the same page. The majority of their team, I mean, most Ravens fans could probably write up, you know, probably get 48 of their 53-man roster. It's a relatively easy team to envision. They're going to be really good. I think there's a bigger picture topic, which we've talked a lot about, for the postseason. And that's something that they can rep out during the season. But just for a team that can handle a training camp and going to have a sweet roster going into the season and not have to worry about getting a lot of guys caught up because these guys already know what they're doing, the Ravens are really equipped. And I think Philly, my number 30 team, right there too. Howie Roseman's ran the Eagles for over a decade now. Doug Peterson is going into his fifth year. He's clearly, you know, established himself. Unlike why I put them ahead of Harbaugh is because Doug is a play caller. And I always lean with the coach that is a play caller. They have a star quarterback in Carson that proved last year that a team that was full of me, you, and three other guys down the stretch, you know, I mean, the reason how they made the playoffs, now they benefited a little bit from an easy schedule, but they have a great head coach and they have a stud quarterback. And I just think that their understanding, every guy on that roster has come in under this regime. Every guy has been picked, you know, in some form or fashion by Doug and definitely Howie. And they're just a high-level organization. So high-level organizations, when shit gets weird, usually separate themselves. So I think the Eagles, now I don't know, you know, there's still some question marks for the Eagles. They lost an all-pro guard. They re-signed Jason Peters. They were going to have to get a rookie wide receiver, you know, kind of up to speed fast. But they have the head coach, like I said, has been there 5 years. The coordinator's been there that entire time, too, on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously their GM and their front office has been intact. I know they lost Joe Douglas, I guess, last year. But Howie's been the boss now for, you know, ever since Chip left. Number two, Seattle. The head coach, the general manager, and the quarterback have been arguably the most, beside Belichick and Brady, the most consistent, you know, trio in the league for the last 8-9 years. And kind of like Philly, just like the Ravens in New England, this group has drafted all these players. They got actually they really benefited last year from DK Metcalf taking a huge role for that team, right? And I the Clowney situation, he doesn't even have a team yet. But there are some questions for them on defense. But their roster on defense the last several years has been nothing like it was, you know, those first 4 or 5 years of kind of their, of that LOB run, right? They win now with their quarterback making plays. They're going to try to run the ball down your throat. Pete Carroll and his culture, and Russell Wilson's going to save the day. So when you got John Schneider, when you got Pete Carroll, and most importantly, Russell Wilson, whether it's coronavirus or whether it's just regular times, I believe you're equipped to handle it pretty seamlessly. And number one, this was a really, really easy choice, was the Kansas City Chiefs. They returned 20 of 22 starters. Their general manager and head coach have worked together for a decade and a half. Veach now has been a GM, I think, going on 3 years. Andy has coached in this league. Is there any coach in the league beside Belichick that has coached more in the NFL? You know, what's Andy going into his 22nd season in the league? Even Pete Carroll obviously left for a while to coach college. Andy knows the league like the back of his hand. Veach and him speak the same language. They have the best player in the league on their roster, who they happen to extend this offseason. Arguably their third or fourth or second best player in Chris Jones. They also just extended Kelce, Tyreek Hill, offensive line, Honey Badger. They were just equipped to defend their championship before this virus ever hit. And I just think there's a common thread here. There's consistency in all these front offices that, you know, in Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, Belichick and Belichick, DaCosta, Harbaugh. They speak the same language, so they know what they're looking for. The hardest part, as we talked about in the earlier segment, was knowing who to keep, knowing who not to keep, knowing what guys to cut, knowing what veterans are over the hill. When you've been working together for a while, you know exactly what that guy's going to think, or you can have contentious discussions and they can get to a positive resolution. It's going to be difficult, for example, Mike McCarthy's never worked with Jerry Jones in a football setting. So once practice is going on, maybe Mike wants to keep a guy that Jerry doesn't or Steven doesn't want to keep. Maybe Joe Judge doesn't want to keep a guy that Gettleman wants to keep. Maybe Ron Rivera thinks the guy sucks and, you know, I don't even know, Kyle Smith or whoever's running the Redskins, right? These situations, Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, look around, I mean, Bill O'Brien, who knows with him on any given game or day, right? There's Minnesota, for example, would be a team that I could have put on this, but there's going to be a lot of pressure on that franchise. They have a lot of new guys coming in. They cut a lot of veterans over the offseason. There's a lot of unknown. The offseason would have been huge for a team like that. Like Diggs, Everson Griffin, they ain't walking through the door. Those guys were Xavier Rhodes. I know he hasn't been good, but he knew what he was doing. Now, whether he did it well, we can argue that all day long. But like when the Honey Badger shows up, he knows Spagnuolo's defense. He knows what is expected. Bobby Wagner can tell every guy exactly what Pete and Russell and John Schneider and get everyone on the same page. The Ravens all speak the same language. When Bill Belichick talks, that's all that matters. Philly, I mean, they've shown their kind of character the last couple years with weird things going on. So they're used to weird things going on. And I think when you look at the Chiefs, when you look at the Seahawks, when you look at the Eagles, when you look at the Ravens, and when you look at the Patriots, these teams are just equipped for this, I mean, unprecedented, bizarre coronavirus training camp. Okay, like always, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff is the Instagram. I don't know if you guys follow Colin. He gave me a little love this weekend on the golf course. I'm a big golf guy. Got a draft. I've been playing a lot of DraftKings golf fantasy. You want in? I always put the link up on my Instagram. It's fun if you like golf, and we'll do that a lot in the fall with football, as long as football happens. But I'm pretty confident football's going to happen. It's just going to be a weird year. Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff, DMs wide open. You guys know the drill. Also, again, leave a review. Greatly appreciated. We're going to have a lot more. You know, it's these last couple weeks, typically when I'd vacation. But, you know, when you're a podcaster, I've kind of been on a vacation, staycation. I've been playing a bunch of golf. You can still just, you know, take 45 minutes to record. Great business model. I love the podcasting field. I highly recommend it. Love the pod. Listen to every episode. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan who has a love-hate relationship with Kirk Cousins, especially with all the money the Vikes are paying him. In your opinion, do you think the Vikings made the right move in extending his contract when there is an influx of young quarterback talent and when the front office deep down knows that Kirk Cousins probably isn't a Super Bowl caliber quarterback? What are your thoughts? Here's what I didn't get. And I obviously know people in that division. They think very, very highly of Rick Spielman. Everyone I know in the NFL thinks Rick Spielman is an excellent GM. From an outsider's perspective, I agree. He has put together a very, very good roster. Very, very good over the last 4 or 5 years. And pivoted well this year, got a first rounder for Diggs. He's impressive. I didn't get that. And I know Cousins' agent, and Cousins is a really high-level guy. You know, they were part of the reason they did this deal, right, was to hit free agency again next year. So it was like, are you going to tag me? So you're going to tag him for 35 or whatever million it was going to get. My pushback is they gave him $60 million or whatever, basically a little over 30 each of the next 2 years, you know, an extension after this season. Who would have paid him that much money? Like, there does get to a point, we always hear this, well, it's just the going market. That's just what guys get paid. Yeah, do good teams overpay? He's not a bad player. He's somewhere between like 10 and 15. Cousins' biggest issue, because when he's in rhythm and you're running the ball, he can kick your ass, and he's put up good stats. As a pro scout described to me the last couple years, he can't play out of rhythm. So if his reads aren't there immediately and he has to scramble, he's done. Like, that's where Mahomes, where Rodgers, where Russell Wilson, they kick your ass out of rhythm. I mean, they're always out of scrambling around, keeping things out of the context of the offense. That is kind of the new age quarterback. It's why I like mobile guys like Carson Wentz, in theory, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, why they have a chance to get a lot better. Lamar Jackson. Now, you can say Tom Brady. Yeah, the day and age of playing like that are probably over. Cousins is, you know, the ultimate pocket quarterback. I wouldn't have done it. Now, I understand where they're coming from. They think he's solid. He's, you know, he's what? He's 31, 32 years old in the quote-unquote prime of his career. But I'm with you. Am I into paying? They gave him $85 million, an extra $60. Not a math major, so what would that be? About, would I be into giving $145 million, give or take, I mean, somewhere around that number, to a guy that I know every morning when I look in the mirror, I can't win a Super Bowl with this guy? I couldn't do it. I have no problem with them giving him his first contract, and I just don't think he quite lived up to it. And he hasn't been bad, but he's just, I'm not into giving. My philosophy is simple. I pay premium to premium players. If you know, Dalvin Cook's a bad example because he's a running back. Danielle Hunter wants huge money. Harrison Smith wants money. Kendricks wants money. Pay those guys. I'm just not paying John Randall, Randy Moss, whoever your good players in the history, Adrian Peterson. Hey, Kirk Cousins, I couldn't have done it. And I like the person. Player's okay. I don't know why they extended him. I find that retired players in the NFL are vastly superior and more enjoyable in the media than retired NBA players. Easiest example are Pat McAfee compared to clown Kendrick Perkins. Do you agree, and why do you think it's like that? I think the biggest issue in the NBA is that the NBA is this isolated little bubble where you can't say anything bad about your friends, where your friends, when you're with them on teams, you never get yelled at. You yell at the coach. You get the coach fired. The NFL is different. When you sit down in a team meeting, and Ron Rivera's up there, and Mike Zimmer's up there, and Bill O'Brien's up there, Bill Belichick's up there, you know, any of these coaches, Sean Payton, at any moment you could get in trouble or called out. At any moment at practice, your position coach can light your ass up and hold you accountable. And that's what coaching is. And when I say light your ass up, I mean get on you, push you, like any coach would do. In the NBA, that doesn't happen. So in the NFL, guys are like legitimately used to kind of a contentious environment with coaches. Obviously, locker rooms, there's a lot of guy talk and ribbing each other, which happens in basketball. But the coaching aspect, to me, guys just in the NFL have thicker skin. Now, sometimes skill guys can be thin-skinned, and every human's a little different. But I think players are used to just being a little more real. The NBA, it's you're only allowed to be fake positive. And then if your friend is a certain player, you got to crush the other player. Like, you know, part of the reason Kendrick Perkins hates on Steph Curry is because LeBron hates Steph. You know, it's just stupid stuff. It just that doesn't happen in the NFL. The NFL is just more of a blue-collar league, and blue-collar people can just, I don't know, just handle stuff a little bit better. That's I guess, my long way of saying just I just think, and I don't think some NFL analysts aren't great. And some NBA, like Charles Barkley. Look at Charles Barkley. Like that era of players, like he can say whatever he wants. This new era of players, they like pick and choose who they like. My question is that the other day you were praising, and rightfully so, the Kansas City GM, but what about John Robinson of the Titans? Has anyone else handled an incredibly difficult offseason better? He got Tannehill to sign for $2 million less than the tag, and Henry to sign for $4 million less than the tag. He signed both players and still has $24 million to chase Clowney, Gutkowski, or a wide receiver. I think his draft class has a chance to be special, but then most of his draft classes do. I think the Titans have a top three coach GM combo out there. John Robinson's my guy. I'm a huge John Robinson guy. I mean, he's one of the GMs in the league that I know. I mean, I'm a big fan. I've only met Vrabel really briefly over a cocktail with a bunch of other people around. I love that Vrabel's a badass. I'm a Titans fan. I like the Tennessee Titans. John Robinson is really good at his job. He's one of, and I guess Vrabel kind of too, they're the Belichick guys that can just be themselves. They're not insecure. They don't worry about, you know, trying to be exactly like Belichick. They're good at their job. John Robinson is a legit scout, and that's how he cut his teeth. And now he's turned into an excellent general manager. And when he made the decision 2 years ago to get rid of the coach and hire Vrabel, it's probably the best thing he's ever done. And the Tannehill move worked out perfectly. You know, taking the kid from Mississippi State last year looks like a genius move. Drafted A.J. Brown in the second round, legit. Getting Henry basically on a two-year contract when he's the best player on their team, smart. Having a backup plan for Marcus Mariota, I mean, he's just, John Robinson's a really good GM. I would agree. The only reason I've known Veach, I guess I've actually known John Robinson longer because I knew him when I was working at Fresno State. But I mean, I worked with Veach, and at the end of the day, Veach was the leading force in Mahomes. So I mean, I just that's. But again, we're nitpicking. I mean, there's a reason those two guys met in the AFC Championship game. They're good at their jobs. Diehard Pats fan from Maine. My entire life, Brady has been our quarterback. So without him, the Pats look pretty bland aside from grabbing Cam. However, I'm really looking forward to seeing N'Keal Harry's potential. I feel like from the small sample size of game time, he's gotten shown a few flashes and some free plays. What are your thoughts? Also, let me know when you're ready to find your main vacation home. Just quit my job to pursue real estate full time. Love the pod. Keep grinding. Hashtag no days off. More of a West Coast vacationer, you know, so I don't know if I'll be in Nantucket with Belichick or anytime soon. If you got, I would love to buy a second home in Lake Tahoe or maybe the Monterey area. So if you know anyone there, now I needed a little more money to do that. I probably need to buy my first home first, but we can always dream big. I was a huge N'Keal Harry fan coming out of college. He reminded me a lot of Juju Smith and his season. He missed the first 8 games last year, and it's well documented how difficult it is for young players to get on the same page as Tom. It didn't work out. I think N'Keal Harry's going to be a good player in the NFL. Here's the other thing. Cam Newton has survived and thrived with players that have big catching radiuses because he's not Drew Brees or Steve Young. He's not pinpoint accuracy. Well, that's N'Keal Harry. He is a jump ball wide receiver. I actually think he's tailor-made for Cam Newton. So I love the Cam Newton-N'Keal Harry combo. I'm a N'Keal Harry stan. I'm going to ride for N'Keal Harry. I love Juju Smith. I love Devontae Adams. These were West Coast players. They were kind of knocked because they were a little slower. I watch a lot of Pac-12 football. I believe in the guy. I think he can play. And I think it will be, in a weird way, a little easier without Tom there because it can be difficult with Brady in your ass about not knowing his crazy-ass offense. Texans fan here. In my opinion, we are bound to be an 8-10 win team for the next 5 years with no chance to win the Super Bowl. They squandered Deshaun's rookie contract, and I don't believe they have enough elite-level players to challenge the Chiefs. Traded Hopkins for a box of chocolates, and JJ is only getting older. What moves would you make to get them to a Super Bowl-caliber level? Also, watch Australian rules football after listening to the last mailbag, and the shit is absolutely bananas. So when I think the Texans, what do they really lack? You know, offensively, in theory, they should be explosive enough. Now, they got DJ, I almost called him DJ, like these Dustin Johnson, David Johnson. Problem is, he's always hurt. Deshaun's a star. Their offensive line should be better. You got Laremy Tunsil. They drafted a couple guys the last couple years. Their offensive line should be better. They're depending on a lot of injured guys, right? Brandon Cooks and David Johnson and Fuller to contribute. Those guys get hurt a lot. But if those guys are healthy, like, that's a legitimate NFL playoff offense. To me, their defense hasn't been good enough. You know, they lost Clowney. Like you said, JJ's a little bit older. Do they cover well enough? To me, their defense just hasn't been on the level in which it has to be for them to make a legit run. And I think it's hard when you don't have the draft picks, because when you usually go, well, where'd they get Clowney? Where'd they get J.J. Watt? Well, they draft them really high. Usually to get good defensive players, you pick them high in the draft. They had Honey Badger, who they got a one-year contract and he left. And it's not all their fault. I know they wanted him back. I'm with you. I think Bill O'Brien's a good coach. I think anytime, even if you gave Bill O'Brien the best roster in the league, I don't think you might not win the Super Bowl. You know, he's not a bad coach by any means, but he's not, I don't see super dynamic. But they have a star quarterback now. I don't really know. You're kind of stuck because you're paying Tunsil a bunch of money. You're about to pay Watson a bunch of money. If JJ gets hurt again or retires or whatever, falls off a cliff, how do you replace him? It's difficult. You know, O'Brien be likely to, like, do a Khalil Mack type trade. I'm usually not short on opinions, but I don't know really what you do. You're just kind of stuck. You hope you catch lightning in a bottle. You hope you get the right seating. The Patriots are gone. Who knows? You know, you got to try to get home field advantage. You can't be going on the road to play the Kansas City Chiefs because you're not better than them. And if you got to go to Kansas City, you got no chance. Now, maybe this year with no fans, not as big a deal, but. Do you think the Titans are a top 5 NFL team if they could sign Clowney? I don't see any glaring weakness on our team. if we sign him and we don't get any more respect, even if we go to the AFC Championship game. If they got Clowney, I mean, I think the AFC South, sneaky, pretty freaking good. Because you got the Colts, who are really good. In theory, should be good. Who are good. I don't know if they'd be really good when you got Phillip Rivers as your starting quarterback. Titans just went to the AFC Championship game. Then you got the Texans, who go to the playoffs all the time. So I would expect, if you got Clowney, you could feel pretty good about being a playoff team, as you should be. So I would say top five might be strong. Sorry, my food order just called, distracted me for a second. But yeah, I think the AFC South has a chance to be, if Phillip Rivers is good, could be a three-team playoff division. Big fan of the pod. What are your thoughts on the Madden 21 rating and Kyler Murray rated so low? Philosophy, zero. Refuse to have any opinions on Madden ratings. And I, growing up, was a huge Madden guy. I don't play video games anymore, though I'm not anti-video games. I can't even pretend to give a shit. I really can't. If I had to guess, they probably gave him like a high 70s, low 80s. He's just, he's a young player. So, it is what it is. No opinion. Okay, let's bang out a couple more questions here. As an NFL fan from New Zealand, we were a little upset down here when Marquette King claimed that he could dominate if he came over to play rugby. I realized that NFL players are freaks of nature, and if they had played rugby their whole lives, they could be amazing on the rugby field. But having seen a lot of players transfer from other sports to rugby, I doubt many could transition as well. Basically, my question is this. What is the general vibe of NFL players and those in the league toward other sports like rugby and rugby league? How are these sports viewed in terms of physicality and difficulty? I don't think most players even think about it. I think they would respect it if you threw it on TV, but I don't think by any means that they are. Most guys wouldn't have an opinion. Marquette King is a punter. So now he's an athletic punter, but to think that he would dominate, I'm with you. I'm calling bullshit. We're not talking like Ray Lewis or Barry Sanders. The guy's a punter. So Marquette King is not even in the NFL. Like, he was out of the league by like his late 20s. So, no, Marquette King should not be speaking for NFL players. But I think if you showed like physical rugby league, I think a lot of NFL players would respect it. It's also a lot different. These guys are used to hitting the big hitters. They got pads. You don't have pads. It's just different. Has a number one overall pick ever had better weapons if healthy? And big if, because a lot of them are often hurt. Than Joe Burrow, AJ Green, John Ross, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and Joe Mixon. Joe Burrow's under pressure rate was very similar to Andy Dalton's and Ryan Finley's last year, so I believe the offensive line talk is a bit overblown. Although I know they aren't the Colts or the Cowboys, I'm curious to hear if any number one pick has better potential weapons week one. Pretty good point. I mean, Joe Mixon's a stud. AJ Green, legit star, but he's hurt a lot. And I mean, literally hurt a lot. He was hurt last season. John Ross, another guy injured a lot. Tyler Boyd, good player. T. Higgins, rookie. But I hear you. I'd have to think. I mean, Jared Goff, right? I guess he had Todd Gurley, but Todd Gurley was injured. I'm just trying to think in recent memory. Baker Mayfield, I guess by year two he had some dudes. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good roster on paper, offensively. But wasn't their offensive line pretty terrible? I don't know much about the guy. I mean, I've never met him, but is the coach any good? It's probably more important as the number one overall pick. If you could say, would you want really good weapons, average to below average coach, or average weapons, really good coach? I'll take the coach. So I just don't know if Zach Taylor, I mean, are we sure? And I'm not saying he's bad. We just don't know. That's asking a lot. Now, you're right. They're players on paper. Now, the division, the Browns are going to have a good defense. Steelers' defense is good, and so is the Ravens. It's a tough defensive division. It's a really, really tough defensive division. So, to me, to be able to – that division, man, that's six games against the Steelers and the Ravens.
And the Browns, you know, should be good. We'll see. But just player-wise on defense, they got some dudes. What's up, brother? Huge fan. As a fellow Niner fan, what are your thoughts heading into the season? I strongly believe players are truly bought into Kyle's system. There may be a drop-off since the division is tough, but can they possibly go deep again? Yeah, you know, I think on paper they're one of the best teams in the league. I think Kyle's clearly one of the best coaches in the league. I'm more of a Jimmy fan, I guess, than some. But no excuse. I mean, they should have, you know, beside like the Saints, as good of a team as there is in the NFC. Now, they're depending on Kinlaw to replace Buckner and Ayuk to just be good. So they're depending on two first-round rookies to impact them. Now, they got Jalen Hurd, the kid from Tennessee, coming back. They lost Joe Staley, but somehow got Trent Williams. So, yeah, you know, they got a million running backs, which Kyle or his dad make look like stars. And, you know, their defense is still really, really good. I guess they have their main question on the team is corner opposite Richard Sherman. And if Richard were to get hurt, their corner depth is not great. But their linebackers are good. Their defensive line is loaded. Their safeties are good. Their O-line's good. Tight end's a star. Their wide receivers are talented. Quarterback solid. Running backs, Gashia, because Kyle's calling plays. Juszczyk's a stud. Yeah, they should be good. You know, they should be, you know, compete to make a run. I'd say them and the Saints, to me, are the clear two best teams. Now, the Seattle will play the Niners tight, and the Rams do too. So, you're right. The division's tough. I don't take the Cardinals as serious as some. Their coach never won more than seven games in college. Never won more than seven games. That's all you need to know. I appreciate everyone listening. Again, subscribe to this podcast. Leave a review. I tip my hat to you. Enjoy. I got baseball on the back. I had to take some phone calls, so I'm recording this a little later, this part, after the beginning part. I've had baseball. I got the Giants-A's game. The Yankees game was on. I'm starting to feel a little normal. Sports are coming back. No fans. But, hey, we can't get greedy right now. Better than nothing. You know, I know a lot of people wanted to shut it all down forever. I'm happy that we got some athletic endeavors going on my television. Enjoy the week. Talk to you soon. Peace.